Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Tyler, the host of the Unleashing Deep In podcast, and we are back with yet another exciting episode. This is a pretty special one because we actually get to come full circle with our very first podcast host, Josh and Andrew from LongFi Solutions, in addition to Nick, who's recently joined our head of partnerships, joining the pod as well to have a really great conversation about the state of deployment. So, gentlemen, thank you for showing up. I'm excited to have another conversation with you and get to chat everything deploying wireless in this deep in space. It's been a very crazy time in the world, but thank you for joining us, and I'm excited to chat.
Yeah, it's rich beer.
This is going to be good. So maybe just to level set everybody, if you've been a long-term watcher of the pod, you know who these guys are, but maybe just for everybody who doesn't know, can you guys share a little bit about what LongFi is, who you are, what you've been doing in the space for these years when people maybe thought you were crazy and now you're probably not so crazy with the way things are looking, but we'll start there and jump into it.
Yeah, sure. Maybe I'll get it started and let Andrew jump in. It's kind of wild because maybe what I'm hoping is we're looking back and saying that Tyler had me on at the beginning of the bear market and then he had me on again at the end of the bear market, but I don't want to speak too soon and just continue to be cautiously optimistic. But I'm sure that some folks have gone back and listened to all of Tyler's podcasts, so I don't want to recap it too much, but basically, that LongFi was kind of born out of the Helium ecosystem and kind of coming full circle again with this kind of new evolution in the space. But basically, got into it when they kicked off out of Austin in 2019. Like a lot of people, was kind of interested in crypto. I was kind of looking for something that had some utility and something where you could use blockchain to build physical real things, and just sort of got into it because my in-laws lived in Austin and they were launching the hotspots out of Austin. I had it shipped to my in-laws. But yeah, from there, just kind of took off. And, a year later, I was trying to recruit Andrew to be one of my hosts for hotspots. And he was like, this is too good. This makes too much sense. Like, let's just team up and do it together. And, things just kind of went from there. I think the big inflection point was when, Helium, kind of brought this concept of kind of the mobile space. I mean, this is maybe 2.5 years ago, FreedomFi was separate and they said, hey, like, let's think beyond IoT, LoRa, like this could be applied to a lot of things. And that kind of, I think, clicked for Andrew and I in terms of wanting to take an enterprise like, perspective on deployments. And so our goal was always to sort of, I think what's nice about DPIN is it's a space for everybody. So you can kind of do it yourself. But we did feel like at some point, for things like to really take off, there was room for the enterprise deployments to kind of provide the pillars or some of the foundation for this network, and that's kind of where we want to be. But I don't want to steal too much thunder from Andrew if he has anything else that he wants to add real quick.
Yeah, thanks, Josh and Tyler. Thanks so much for having us back on. I think the biggest thing in terms of the inception of LongFi was just this huge curiosity with having a blockchain and crypto economic model that actually worked with real world infrastructure. And so it's been amazing to see from back in the LoRa days, just the evolution of the space and the maturity of the space to move not only from LoRa to things like cellular, but also all the different physical infrastructure projects that comprise the DPIN ecosystem now. And so I think really what Josh and I want to contribute is just bringing a enterprise level of just deployment experience and, be a conduit for capital into the system to really grow and help the ecosystem flourish.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you sort of talked about that transition. This year has really been the year of 5G. There's been a couple other advancements that have happened in the space. Can you talk just through what has 2023 been like from an enterprise level deployment standard, and how is that sort of compared to years previous? Can you give us sort of a level set of what that has been like for you?
Yeah, it's been really exciting in 2023. I think we started when we first kind of formed the idea of LongFi. It was always to kind of raise capital and really go at this head on in terms of scaling up quickly. And so 2023, we had been working with a really close advisor at the time who was raising a fund. And so we ended up bringing some capital into the business and really scaling things up. So I think it started off more on a high note by getting that done. And then there was kind of this lull of just projects not really finding product market fit, having some different token prices and things like that kind of drop off. And it really kind of brought it back to maybe more of a low point around the middle of the year and in the fall. But, bringing it back up at the end of the year here has been a real boon to just, I think, everyone in the system, but especially ourselves, because we did hold this really strong thesis of just decentralized infrastructure. And it feels like, maybe it's really all about timing, right? Like, it's kind of helping us realize, like, I think the thesis is still correct. It's just that we had the timing off a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. Well, they say that bears are for builders. And so, I think maybe there's a little bit of silver lining in the fact that as you've been building and deploying all these, you're sort of positioned incredibly well for what hopefully is, as Josh said earlier, the start of the bull market, excuse me. So yeah, that's incredible. So, I mean, when you started, it was obviously things like LoRa, and as 5G has came into the mix, at least on the wireless side, is that sort of your bread and butter when it comes to deployments? Is it CBRS everywhere? Is that sort of the main focus, or how has that affected you guys' deployment strategy in 2023? And we can jump into that a little bit.
Yeah, I could kind of kick that off a little bit. So as you alluded to, we kind of cut our teeth on the LoRa IoT side, and then it was clear there's kind of like a bigger opportunity there. So there is a little bit of a step change in terms of complexity and the types of sites that you need to acquire, and just a lot more work to convince property owners to kind of have your equipment up on their roof. So I think it definitely got a lot more complicated. I mean, we kind of had things started to heat up a lot a year and a half ago when Pollen kind of came onto the scene as maybe a kind of a competitor to Helium, and so it was the first time that there were sort of two choices, so to speak. But you'll find, like, talking to us, it's not really like one or the other. It's always about thinking through how each project kind of fits onto your portfolio. Because every project, if you dig into each of these DY projects, I mean, I think we'll probably talk more about this later, is, five or six, they actually all have like a different nuanced approach in terms of how they're building their network and where they're building their network and how they're building their network. And very rarely is a really truly like a head-to-head, like we're both fighting over the exact same thing. And so we try to step in and kind of broker where each project fits the best and try to accentuate the strengths of all the projects and their kind of specific kind of area that they're trying to chase. And I think that's one of our value adds. But and maybe I'll pause there for a second, because I think I may have gone off a little bit on a tangent from your original question.
No, that's great. Nick, I don't know if you wanted to jump in and share something, but.
Yeah, no, that's all super interesting. I obviously each of these projects has its own specific nuance. And I think that the core teams of these projects all have their own thesis on how that translates to better coverage in the long term. So it's been interesting to see this entire industry play out like that. Obviously, some are progressing faster than others, but I think that we've seen in crypto time and time again that, like, the tortoise and the hare, like, usually the tortoise is going to win that race long term. So super interesting to see that you guys have your hand in so many different kinds of DY projects.
I think the other part of that too is, and maybe Andrew will add some more color here, is I hate to use the word hedging, but when you look at a property, you're thinking about what's the best way to maximize, not only the revenue to the site itself, but like adding value in a sort of like immediate area. And we've continued to try to find whether actually it's a blockchain project or non-blockchain projects, like stacking different types of infrastructure that are useful, so that, to Nick's point, whether you're currently riding the hare or the tortoise, like, it all kind of averages out to a good place that works for everybody. So I don't know, Andrew, if you wanted to talk a little bit about how, like, we kind of look at a site, think about a site, and kind of how to get the most out of it.
Yeah, definitely. The view of a site is typically, there's so many other technology improvements, add-ons that you can do for a property that really aren't captured by decentralized infrastructure at this point, but can still add a ton of value to the property itself in terms of if they're renting to folks, having some type of improved technology interface that improves the resident experience. There's other, you know, Wi-Fi offloading projects that are more traditional fiat based revenue share models as well. So there's just a huge technology stack that, as we've kind of grown and developed as a company, we have our fingers kind of in more areas and understand better how to kind of fully utilize a property.
Yeah. No, I think that certainly clicks in terms of anybody that's kind of been exposed to some of, whether it's the projects themselves or just being at one of these property sites. You know, there's clearly a stack that has to be accessible by consumers there. One of the things that I'm curious about is, can we, for folks who are interested in, you know, setting up maybe their first radio, can you talk through when you're approaching a deployment site? And I know that it varies between the projects, and we'll talk about that a little bit. What are some of the things you're looking for as an enterprise level deployer where you're saying, okay, this makes sense for either this type of project, or is it, you know, a number of people in the area? Is it a height thing? Is it sort of, can you just talk through some of those baseline factors that are always a non-negotiable when it comes to deploying these radios in different areas?
Yeah, great question. Each project is unique in terms of how it's trying to service demand in the marketplace. And so you see some projects that, like Kelia Mobile, they are trying to create the demand side themselves as kind of this hybrid MVNO model. Others are trying to act more as a neutral host. And so those ones are a little bit more agnostic to the customers in the area when they're trying to kind of serve a basket of them. So really, in either scenario, it does come down to foot traffic and population centers where there's going to be a lot more people in the area that are using their cell phones. So I think that really is one of the key pieces, is just how many people are congregating in an area and using cell phone data. The other piece too is there's, you know, physical factors that play into it, where if you're trying to set up a, you know, a high performance CBRS node on a rooftop, you just have to have a really good line of sight across an area to really get good contiguous coverage in that zone. So those are some of the things that we try to work on. And then the last one is really just backhaul. All of these projects, as they ramp up in terms of the data flow across them, you're going to have to upgrade and have a really robust backhaul for them. And so the properties that we're typically looking at, you're going to want eventually to have some type of like fiber line that you can get there to really service that demand.
I think it's staggering the number of like homes and businesses and like commercial spaces that are still on like sub 100 meg internet. That's like, I know a lot of deployers, like typically they'll find interested parties who are like, yeah, that sounds great, but you go and you test their speeds and they're basically only able to use like their point of sale system, and that's it, and that basically consumes all their bandwidth. So it's definitely a nuance that I think a lot of people getting into the deployment space need to be paying attention to.
And that's a good point, Nick, in terms of the existing infrastructure that is there. A business that has like a very low internet plan because they're trying to keep their costs low for their overhead structure, there may be a benefit to saying, hey, you can actually upgrade your internet and pay for that upgrade essentially by leveraging some of these decentralized infrastructure layers. So it is, I would say, a win-win in a lot of cases.
Yeah. How much of that is part of your actual deployment? Is it, you know, 30% of businesses that you say, we got to upgrade the actual, you know, line that's connecting to them? Are most of them receptive to it when it comes down to the actual wire that's sort of helping power the whole thing to work in the first place?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends. And there could be different reasons why different hosts want to do it differently. In some cases, if the business is, they have excess bandwidth and there's not a lot of sensitivity in terms of sharing that bandwidth, then I think you're right. That probably falls in the 30% range. However, there are other situations where either one, they don't have enough bandwidth, but just out of their own comfort, they'd rather just kind of separate things and not deal with, you know, billing and sharing. And in some cases, it's like pretty easy to get set up on a separate a line, you know, whether that's with the traditional ISPs. I think there's also some untraditional aspects where you can sort of like create your own mini WISP, where you have kind of like a hub and spoke where you have a good fiber connection at one site, and then you've got line of sight to several other sites in the area, and you do some point to point. I think that's actually become a little bit more of our strategy, and I think there's going to be a lot of interesting opportunities for folks who, as like the number of like DY deployments intensify or concentrate in certain regions, where maybe one could even be a bit of like a decentralized WISP or a decentralized ISP of some kind that really hasn't been a point of emphasis, because everything's been a little bit spread out at this point as everyone's kind of built in their little backyard. But I think that's kind of an interesting angle. But you're right, Tyler. I mean, that is a consideration that people bring up, and a concern is, you know, is my internet safe? Is it going to slow down my point of sale? All like really good questions. And I think there are a number of different possible solutions. And so just a matter of sort of kind of what makes everyone feel comfortable. I know for us, honestly, the one thing is, it's just like, I don't necessarily want to take very much risk in impacting someone's main business. Because the idea is like, we're kind of like an accretive add-on opportunity, but you know, you don't want to jeopardize your core business. So I think we tend to kind of lean towards managing kind of like a separate infrastructure layer for that. So I think there's definitely some like arbitrage there that could be taken advantage of, where maybe there's a way to do it in a way that works for everybody, but doesn't like duplicate things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know it's because I'm not in the deployment business, so these are the types of considerations that you don't think about or you don't really experience until you're doing it at scale like you guys are. And so I imagine that's just always part of the conversation. And so it's great to, you know, see how you're sort of getting ahead of that and addressing the problem so you can be a value add, not maybe a value detractor from whatever you guys are trying to do with these businesses. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think the worst call you can get is, hey, you set up this equipment and now our internet doesn't work. So that's kind of the worst case scenario. But luckily, we've avoided that to this point.
Yeah, I'm sure you're probably always on call from that standpoint, trying to, you know, hoping that doesn't come in the middle of the night when someone's doing some big launch and all of a sudden their internet goes down. That would be suboptimal, to say the least. But I'd love to go back where we started within 2023, specifically on the 5G and the mobile side, with really two projects, as you mentioned, Helium Mobile, Pollen. Obviously, there was sort of this falling out with Pollen, and I don't know how much we need to get into that now. But what has there's been a lot of new projects that have come on the scene. Really Wireless is one of them that come to mind. I know World Mobile is looking at getting in to the U.S. You've got a few other ones that I've got on my notepad here. Carrier One, for example, is looking. So how are you looking at these different projects? And you mentioned that there's different kind of components where it's not necessarily a head-to-head competition, but different projects work better in different instances. And so can you sort of talk through what the different projects are like and how you think about, hey, this site might be better for this type of project versus another, and how you're seeing the take over the world from the deployment side with these different projects as sort of your partner in this instance?
Yeah, definitely. I think just from a high level standpoint, it is great to see that there are so many projects coming into the space. I think generally speaking, you want to have as many innovators kind of attacking the same challenge head on. And to that point, I think for everything that kind of went wrong with Pollen, there was a lot that went right in terms of them pushing kind of the frontier of decentralized wireless. They had some really good innovations in terms of the gamification for mapping. I think that really was a net positive for the industry, as well as working on a lot of these handoff issues with CBRS. And really on the technical front, pushing, I think, the technology forward a lot. And so, maybe it didn't end well, but I think in general, having more really like hardworking, innovative teams in the space really makes a big difference. So that was my general point. And then maybe, Josh, I don't know if you want to talk about some of the specific projects that we're seeing pop up and kind of maybe compare and contrast.
Yeah, I think you could almost, if you wanted to break it down by almost like project type and you think about it, again, they all have their own individual nuances, but if I was to sort of like start to group them together a little bit, you know, one is that there's the hybrid MVNO approach, which Helium Mobile is currently pushing. They're creating their own demand. They have a macro partner, T-Mobile, to fall back on. And so they're kind of tackling it from two sides. I know Really Wireless, to some extent, has kind of a similar model in the sense that they recently announced they're using T-Mobile as their macro provider. I haven't heard much on like the token aspect of it, but I know they're still kind of in the early stage. And I think you kind of have a group that is neutral host. So, meaning, as Andrew alluded to earlier, is trying to, they're not necessarily pushing a carrier, a consumer-facing plan, but rather, you know, want to be the neutral infrastructure that serves the customers of carriers in dead spots or under capacity. And so I think of projects like XNet and Carrier One that both have kind of are taking more of that neutral host approach and really trying to attract enterprise deployers onto their network. And even leveraging kind of brownfield deployments that can be upgraded or incurred. And then I think one that kind of gets left off, and I guess World Mobile, I think, kind of falls in between those two, I should say, because World Mobile sounds like will be launching their own consumer-facing plan, but they also are working on roaming agreements and looking to be a roaming network. And so they're kind of in between there. And then the last piece that I don't think gets as much attention is Althea, which I put more into like the ISP-MSP bucket. And we're talking very quite a bit with Althea and hope to do some projects next year with them. Kind of, again, a bit overlooked because they're not as consumer-facing. But if you, as Andrew kind of alluded to earlier, there are situations where you're working with a multi-dwelling unit, like an apartment complex or an underserved community, where actually having just having internet is an important or critical or a critically lacking piece of service. And Althea has a really nice toolkit that allows companies like LongFi or really any sort of kind of like local community to act as an ISP and provide like underserved, lower income, rural folks with plans. And I think we're trying to work together on how we kind of loop in some of these other DY aspects as well. So yeah, I think those are kind of the three areas I think about. We're happy to kind of go into more detail, or if Andrew wants to add a little bit more color on some of the nuance between the projects or the approaches. We kind of go any direction you guys want.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I did want to mention, I think if you're coming into this space and you're trying to kind of wrap your head around all the different projects popping up, I'm sure there will be additional ones as well. Obviously listening to Tyler here and having the great conversations with all these different folks involved in the ecosystem, but we're seeing some of the either investors or platform providers like Hotspotty come out with things like Deepin Hub. The guys at EV3 are launching, I think it's called Deepin Ninja. So these are places where you can kind of see at an overall level all of the projects that are in the space and do a little bit of research and deep dive into which one, to your point, Tyler, before, is like, which one do you actually pick for a site that you own, right? So there's a lot more information out there today than there was a year ago, for sure.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely, it's sort of an evolving world, but you're spot on in the fact that there's so much more information at our fingertips. Nick, I don't know if you want to add anything onto that, in conversation there, but
just, I think that's awesome what you guys are doing with Althea. I don't have a ton of info on the project. I know I've dove in before, but just generally, like, decentralized wireless is great. I think all of us see the value there, but that value isn't totally unlocked until we can decentralize the ISP as well, right? Like, you backhaul all the way from the top of your stack all the way to the bottom in a permissionless manner through a distributed reward system. And so I think that's awesome that you guys are placing focus there. I don't think very many other deployers are even thinking along those lines quite yet.
Yeah. Can someone give like a 30-second overview from Althea? I don't know very much at all about what they're doing, so I'd love to just get the 30-second overview so I'm in the know here.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I mean, maybe I'll have to connect you guys with Deb and have a convo there. But, you know, from my perspective, from my conversations with the team over there, to me, it's like they can kind of fit anywhere. And to me, they want to provide the tools to either deployers or communities to build their own internet and provide internet plans to their communities. And I think Andrew and I have found, especially over the last 6 months, that there, if you understand where to go look, there's a lot of opportunity through government affordable connectivity program and other government grants that Althea has a very good understanding of how to connect that to actually making something happen on the ground. And they're happy to kind of be involved in the whole process, or it could be as much as like, hey, LongFi is good at doing these three things. We're happy to be kind of the back end or like the toolkit for you guys. And you know, maybe the customer service if you want to sell internet plans and things like that. So they're very modular and flexible in that regard. but I think it's to me, it's like a little bit less, they're not so much focused on the POC aspect. I think they're more about like using the blockchain technology itself to make the technology cheaper. And I don't think that that's not a negative in any way. It's just, I think there's different aspects of blockchain, whether it's the tokenomics side or it's the actual technology, the micropayments, the security. And their focus, I think, is just on some of those other things. And they're not necessarily trying to generate supply. They're just trying to find the demand that gets overlooked by the traditional telcos.
Sure. Sure. That makes a lot of sense. That's a great overview. And you sort of spurred two questions in my mind. The first one, circling back to what Andrew said a little bit ago, talking about how Pollen was really innovative on some of the things that they were doing with preventing gaming and other sort of advancements. Can you talk through some of the differences at whether it's the tokenomic model within these different projects and how that might affect what you're doing at the deployment side? And then the other thing is that I'd love to jump in after the fact, talking about the different technologies that are becoming part of your deployment. So it was very CBRS heavy at the beginning of the year with Wi-Fi coming into the mix. That's sort of added a new dimension to what I imagine you're doing. So can you talk through maybe some of the nuances at the project level, whether it's the coverage or anti-gaming and how that might affect deployments? And then we can talk about some of the tech side too after the fact.
Yeah, I can jump on the tokenomics question first. I think, again, yeah, some of the innovations that happened at the early part of the year have kind of materialized in projects like Helium or XNet. So in the example of Helium, as they're rolling out the Helium mobile coverage in Miami, Nova Labs is actually incentivizing boosted hexes. And so this is a way for them to show specifically, hey, this is exactly on a map where we want coverage, and we will juice up the rewards to really bring in the supply, which is supply meaning the people that are installing hotspots in those areas. So I think that's a really key differentiator in terms of meeting the supply with the demand. For a project like XNet, they're more trying to create clusters of coverage within a specific city or region. And so they've adopted this approach where they have gold and silver hexes. So those kind of give a signal to where there's like a 25 or 50% boost in earnings in those areas to kind of help maximize POC for some of the early builders in those areas. So you've seen a lot more of this targeted approach. And it makes a lot of sense because you can't have a disparate network across the U.S. You really have to have some level of, you know, densification of that coverage to have a true network effect and value being created.
Yeah, I fully recognize that. One of the first conversations we had on the pod was actually with Rich from XNet, and he really stressed the point that for these networks to be viable, it's not just about having a node plugged in every hex. It's really about coverage and density specifically within those high traffic areas, as you alluded to. And so seeing how different projects are approaching that, I think, is quite unique. And the example, we'll dive into the Miami thing specifically with Helium Mobile in a little bit. But I don't know, Josh, if you got anything you wanted to add around some of the differentiators in the projects and how that affects your deployments.
Yeah, I mean, if kind of like shifting a little bit to the technology or the hardware choices, I know there's now a lot of projects that are considering Wi-Fi versus CBRS or perhaps both. And so I think it's, you know, and if you go into the Helium Discord right now, it's a kind of heated discussion going on about the value of each of those technologies, but it's all really about like application and timing and where things are and their evolution on the technology curve. And so neither is the best or the worst. It just kind of depends on the situation. But I guess in short, you know, Wi-Fi is great for a lot of reasons because, you know, it's easier to install. There's less site work required in a lot of cases. The firmware is much more ubiquitous and works really well with a lot of phones. But, you know, it's best suited for like non-moving traffic. So either very slow moving or people that are sitting or, you know, things like that. So that's kind of what you look for there. You know, CBRS is really interesting because it has more power. It can reach further. Because it's using spectrum that's not as crowded as 5 gigahertz and 2.4. It's really, really, it can be very, very nice if like you're in the middle of Times Square where like probably every single like building and like POS has like, it's like shooting out Wi-Fi everywhere. And it's like very noisy, you know, RF environment. you know, having access to cellular spectrum can really be a game changer in that specific instance. But, you know, the downside is that it is a little bit more complex to install. It costs more. And in some cases, the technology hasn't quite gotten there yet. Not all phone manufacturers support band 48, which is what CBRS is. Or in some cases, you know, different projects or carriers are still integrating CBRS into their tech stack. And so it's not as compatible, perhaps, as we'd like it to be. So, again, I don't think it's going to be one or the other. And I think if a project or a team is actually able to use both and use them at the right time on the same network, that's going to be super valuable in the future.
And how is that actually going into effect with your deployment strategies? Is it that you're looking at, like, if let's say you're in a high rise, is it that you're putting CBRS in a place where maybe it's a little bit more high up, and then you're looking at covering the coffee shops at the bottom with the Wi-Fi units? What does that split generally look like, at least in today? And do you see that changing over time?
Yeah, I think it's actually been shifty because, you know, many of the projects weren't putting as much emphasis on Wi-Fi. Although I think part of that is now a lot of manufacturers are starting to put out Wi-Fi 6E compatible devices. And we're now talking about maybe Wi-Fi 7 here soon. So and there's quite a bit of improvement in terms of range and capacity with that technology. So I think things are different than they were in the past. And that's probably to some extent why there's more emphasis on that. And so CBRS was the main focus for most projects, and now it's becoming more, some are shifting part of their portfolio, so to speak, to Wi-Fi, and we'll adapt, we're kind of adapting accordingly. But I think you're exactly right, Tyler. It's a situation where you have access to the roof on top of a large building that you want to hit, like, the convention center as a half a mile away and kind of create like a contiguous or continuous experience for a customer. But you know, at the bottom, you're not going to necessarily get the best sort of like RF experience with CBRS, but you set up some little, you know, Wi-Fi access points in the cafe. So I think you're spot on, Tyler, in terms of like how you're thinking about it and how we think about it when we look at a site.
I think sure. Wi-Fi is particularly interesting in the context of like leaving the North American market, because the way that these DY networks are going to be bootstrapped outside the US, if Wi-Fi is already live, is with Wi-Fi, due to that CBRS band not being licensed in most other countries around the world, or I guess being licensed.
Yeah, no, I think it's actually a really good point. And we didn't really emphasize it in the intro, but in our like LoRa IoT journey, we expanded beyond the U.S. and we have deployments in Ecuador, Colombia, Guyana, and a few other places. And, you know, during the kind of last bull market, we felt like that eventually, you know, to kind of our next going with this is like DPIN and DY is like was like built for international, because it's an environment, a lot of cases, where it's very risky to bring in capital. So you want low cost deployments. It just kind of has to work, you know. You kind of have to be able to move very quickly and kind of rely on sort of like local communities and people to sort of build this stuff out. So to me, it's like kind of like perfect for the second and third kind of developing world, so to speak. And so, yeah, we've been hoping for years that there's sort of going to be a product market fit where there's a DPIN project or DY project that kind of overlaps with us. And so, yeah, I'm hoping one day we can go kind of light up Colombia or one of these other countries that we had our IoT hotspots. It would be very rewarding.
Yeah, yeah. I think markets are generally characterized by like an extreme amount of underserved connectivity. There's like, especially in that South American market, like Wi-Fi networks, whether deep in or not, like people-based Wi-Fi networks are taking off because in a lot of cases, that's the only way to service a specific region or specific area. So great to hear you guys are placing some emphasis there.
And speaking of that, maybe a quick shout out to Weiru. So you guys look up Weiru. They're working on a Wi-Fi platform out of Ecuador and Colombia. So we hasn't been the right fit yet to work with them directly on a deployment, but we've been chatting with the team and really excited to see what they come up with kind of in 2024.
That's super interesting. I'm going to definitely have to check that out. I don't usually make stock picks or sort of predictions, but I tweeted a couple, maybe a month ago or so, that I think this sort of decentralized Wi-Fi approach will be, I think it has the opportunity to be 100 times more impactful, just given the fact that Wi-Fi, you know, sort of ubiquitous throughout the world, especially in underserved communities, and how valuable that can be. And the barrier to entry for people getting these things deployed, it's so low, and there's so little friction involved with that. that I think it's got a lot of legs to be able to go the distance, especially when you start talking about, you know, you really enlightened me on this with our first conversation, getting these radios deployed properly. There's a lot of, it's, you don't just plug it in and stick it on a roof somewhere and say, okay, here we got coverage. It's, there's quite a few technicalities that go into it. And so a lot of those barriers can be removed with Wi-Fi. So I personally, I'm pretty optimistic on Wi-Fi being a big thing in the future.
Yeah, no, Tyler, totally agree. I think the way that CBRS was talked about in terms of it was this frequency band that was just opened up, and now, you know, individual contributors can set up nodes and kind of manage and operate them. That is turning back the clock to when Wi-Fi rolled out. So back in the day, I don't think anyone really knew how to set up a Wi-Fi router. But nowadays, it's your grandma can do it usually. So
right.
To your point, yeah, the adoption for Wi-Fi is just the curve is so much further along than something like CBRS, even though CBRS we do feel has a ton of value in the ecosystem. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's super impactful. Ironically, when I moved, I don't know, a couple months ago, I switched Wi-Fi or wireless providers for my home internet, and I switched to AT&T was offering like the best fiber coverage here. And when I think of great user experiences with setting up Wi-Fi, I don't put AT&T at the top of that list by any stretch of the imagination, but they made it so simple. And I'm like, man, if AT&T can help people set up these kinds of coverages that simplistically, I imagine that'll translate to everyone else. And so, I agree. I think there's just a lot of prospects there. I'd love to talk quickly, and this is a little bit specific to Helium Mobile. You mentioned Miami a bit ago, which Nova Labs is sort of saying, hey, these are the places that we want deployments. How are you thinking about those boosted zones as part of your deployment strategy? What are your thoughts about those boosted zones sort of transitioning from just inside Miami to nationwide, and how that'll affect what you're doing at the deployment level? Is that something that's on your radar that you're thinking about as part of your guys' approach here?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll maybe let Josh touch on this. He's part of the mobile working group under Helium. And so he has a lot of insight into kind of the overarching strategy from Miami to nationwide.
Yeah, just to jump in for a second, we're definitely looking at Miami. You know, we've done deployments in the South Florida region before with Helium IoT, with other CBRS projects. We have a really good extended deployment team down there. And so we were really excited to find out that that's where Helium Mobile was going to launch out of. And, you know, from kind of like the mobile working group committee, I know there's constantly a lot of discussion about, you know, this, you know, these incentives and that incentives. I do genuinely feel that the carrier hex boosting is one of the most valuable tools that are available, because I know for our business, we want to build something that is sustainable in all markets. And to me, if Nova is telling me that they have customers that are using the network in those areas, that's where I want to be. So we've been, you know, very hyper-focused on those boosted hexes. I know there's been a little bit of consternation about the pace of the deployments, but I think people have to keep in mind that when you're that specific about where you want to be, and if you actually come and look at where some of these boosted hexes are, you know, it's kind of like, okay, this wasn't the Gucci store. This is a kind of a tough nut to crack. Like, how are we going to get into this like high-end luxury store? And so I think we are making some progress. It's not a boosted hex, but we did tweet today one of our deployments that happened yesterday in a really awesome pizza shop, Andiamo, on Biscayne Boulevard in Miami. So things are moving. And I think that really other cool thing is because, you know, deployers kind of tend to work together a little bit, and we can talk about that later. We're also helping out a number of other deployers who would make good progress on SIDAC, but don't necessarily have the boots on the ground. And so we're all about working together, and we're lining up our installation teams with other deployers to get their sites up and running too.
Yeah. In the nature of open and permissionless, that's amazing to hear. What does that actually look like at a tactical level for people that are either other deployment companies that are interested in helping, you know, needing those boots on the ground folks? What does that look like from your guys' business and interoperating with these other companies?
Yeah, I mean, everybody is pretty open-minded about how that can be structured and how that could be done. I think what's nice is that at some point, you know, it's kind of finding the right people that obviously have the traditional experiences, either they're electricians or they're kind of networking technicians or, you know, other types of antenna installations. And then just kind of adding in those wrinkles that kind of come along with some of the DPIM projects right now. I think you're right, Tyler. I think eventually it will literally be so easy that like anybody can do it. But in the meantime, it's just having that comfort that there's somebody that you can trust, because there is, yes, there is something about being able to install it, but also being able to kind of provide a professional image when someone goes to a store and can interact with it, with the owner, and be very professional in the work that they do, and all that is also very important. So we take a lot of pride in our team kind of like checking all those boxes. And so, yeah, a lot of it is just kind of working with people that want to do the installations the right way and want to, you know, get the locations. Like, we're not necessarily, you know, interested in just like random locations that don't fit, you know, with the network. So we do have like a little bit of our own filter where it's like, I'm not just going to like have my team go deploy things to deploy things. We want to kind of work with like-minded people who want to build the network, I think, in the way that it's trying to push us. I don't know, Andrew, if you like, you know, you're very operationally focused as well. You may have some more to add in terms of like how we work in Miami and other places too.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it on the head. It's just, you have to have trusted people that do good work. And I think in our view, and you just kind of hit on this as well, we want to build for long-term success of these projects. And ultimately that means that you have to have quality deployments that are actually going to get used from a data transfer perspective. And so that's what's nice about going back to the question about the boosted hexes and how does that inform our decision-making. We're like any operator in the system. We're following the incentives that are laid out by Nova Labs and by the Helium Mobile Working Group. And so the more they can do to say, hey, this is exactly where we want coverage, we're going to have data transfer. That to us is just a more sustainable model to where, you know, POC isn't going to last forever, essentially. And so you want to have the data flows that actually back up the long-term revenue streams for a successful business and, you know, operating in a sustainable manner. So I think what it comes down to is just identifying those locations, working with other people that want to build, you know, valuable coverage for the network, and then doing it in a professional manner.
Yeah. I'd love to, you talked a little bit about kind of what's coming ahead. And I know, Josh, you maybe have some inside baseball insights just given what you're doing with the working group. But what Nova Labs is doing in Miami, for example, how do you see that sort of spanning out nationwide? And then what is that going to look like in 2024? Is that going to be, you know, people that want to start deploying are going to, it's like better to get in now at some of the high density areas within these different major metropolitan areas? Like, can you give us some kind of insights as to at least how you're speculating that's going to fold out or unfold? And then,
yeah, you know, I think, you know, the Nova team kind of relies a lot on the community for feedback and sort of driving the growth of the network. And right now, I think they're experimenting or trying a lot of different, you know, things in parallel. I think they've been pretty transparent that, you know, Miami was the pilot city. We're going to do the $5 a month, you know, see where it goes from there. And then I think I'm sure that to some extent informed, you know, their decision to launch a nationwide plan at $20 a month. And so, yeah, I think right now as the Wi-Fi, you know, is getting rolled out, I think the community is kind of wrangling with what's the right balance of rewarding what appears to be the most valuable today versus what might be equally valuable in the future. Mainly kind of this discussion about CBRS and Wi-Fi. I mean, I have to think that there's a place for both in the long term. There's just, each has like different challenges and limitations, and it's tough because like this space moves so quickly. Normally you'd give yourself like a pretty decent feedback loop where you'd wait a certain amount of months, but like, nobody waits in this space. And so Everybody, as soon as something doesn't feel right, or it seems like too skewed in one direction, there's a lot of like correction that folks want to do. So that's a tough balance in terms of like, hey, like this will work itself out. Let's not overcorrect. Let's not go vote this and then go vote that, because there is sort of a downside where it really creates a whipsaw for us as deployers, other people, where it's like, we're trying to move at a big scale. And I'd argue that like we do move very quickly relative to the traditional model, but like, you know, we can't completely change our business model every week every month either. So it's kind of finding a balance of like, it's okay to tweak things to a certain extent, but like, just be careful about whipsawing, because there are, I think, some unintended consequences in that regard. But, you know, otherwise, like, definitely, you know, really excited about next year and where things can go. I think the one really big opportunity, and I don't know if you want to call it a business model per se, But this idea of because there's a very nice kind of UX associated with Helium Mobile, and it's very priced very competitively. And I know there's some discussions about, you know, like affiliate programs and things like that. It's nice. It'd be nice to have like the boosted hexes everywhere, but in a way they've kind of, you know, you kind of have these tools where you can go to places that are not boosted and kind of like build this whole flywheel yourself, where it's like, hey, I'm going to deploy here. Hey, here's a QR code. You can earn some affiliate, you know, stuff by signing up your customers. Those customers keep returning to use the hardware, and it's just like virtuous cycle. I think those are all probably pretty critical, and it could be a very effective. And that specifically, you don't need boosted hexes, but then you have the boosted hexes for like the really like lock, like the real slam dunk. It's like man, like there's thousands of subscribers in this part. Like you've got to get coverage here. This is like a slam dunk. So I think there's a lot, you know, a different couple of models. So it changes every week to some extent.
This, oh yeah,
actually, it's only amplified with some of the token price. The conversations are gonna only get more intense from here.
Yeah, no, as people's money are on the line, obviously they're going to get a little bit more emotional about some of these decisions. But Nick, I don't know if you want to jump in and share something.
Yeah, I think like overall in DY, like through kind of the previous cycle or two and kind of right up until this point, it's been a lot of figuring out the supply side and the demand side being users, phone plan, supply being the hotspot installers. But I think this is the first time when like an individual can build that entire flywheel themselves and like become not only their own AT&T, but their own AT&T store, start onboarding their friends, having their friends onboard their friends. And like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how people take advantage of referral programs and incentive mechanisms to onboard other people to the network and kind of build their own mini MVNOs, leveraging Helium Mobile and small towns across America.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. By the way, this is, I've never actually shared this. Last summer, I like built a website that would, I wanted to do exactly that, which is, Helium Mobile was like, you go on, you could buy like whatever Android phone, iPhone, pick the plan, you could sell it, then you could like have the radio there. That I think is going to be an awesome opportunity. One question that it created was, that works in a model with Helium Mobile where there's sort of this hybrid network, but what about different projects like the XNets of the world or the Carrier ones where they're taking sort of a different approach, being more of that neutral host? Do you foresee that a type of model is possible with their sort of token economic structure? And just, I don't know if you could sort of speculate of what might happen in 2024 with some of those other sort of varied approach projects.
Yeah, no, great question. And I think that is one of the million-dollar questions in this industry. I think in general, and really emphasizing Nick's previous point on, you know, you want to have Nova Labs there as kind of the first adopter of this type of network structure and providing the tools for you to kind of be your own MVNO, let's say. But it really is all about the tools and not relying on them for everything, right? And so they're going to do some marketing, but the community kind of has to pick that up as well. And so it's really about just empowering those communities and builders. So in respect to like a project like XNet, right, they're building neutral host infrastructure. And so, you know, you're going to have multiple parties, hopefully, that can roam onto that coverage and pay a roaming price negotiated. And so that's going to provide maybe a more stable income, just generally speaking. But then you get into situations where you could basically white label an eSIM and provide that to a community. And so that's something that you're already seeing the XNet team do. They have a pilot set up in a rural town where they set up some equipment and they can provide SIMs to the folks in that area to kind of bolster their coverage. I think in general, the benefit of Nova is that they have a macro provider. And so you kind of need, again, going back to like, you need the tools still. And so I think you need someone like XNet to make it really easy to white label a SIM and potentially even have an option to have a wholesale contract with a macro provider like T-Mobile or AT&T or whoever. And so, yeah, I think in 2024, you'll see some of those launched. The other area we see as kind of a unique space would be in like event management, where you could have a concert or a big festival, be able to provide kind of a more of a VIP experience or an upcharge for having a private cellular network. And so being able to have it as simple as, hey, you come to this concert venue, you scan this QR code, your phone loads an eSIM that's good for 24 hours at that site. And then you can have, better access to like a, as Josh was making the point before, if you're in Times Square, it's a bunch of interference, and having a private network could be a huge value add. So anyway, those are some of the areas kind of where we see some of the value potentially in the next year.
Yeah, that's great. One of the questions I have for 2024 is, do you see room for other types of like radio frequencies being part of that deployment? Obviously, it's been a heavy focus on CBRS and Wi-Fi now, but things like LoRa, is that still important to what you're doing at the deployment side? Is there enough coverage there where that's sort of taken a back seat? Just for your guys' business in particular, how are you looking at that from a deployment standpoint in the next year?
Yeah, I think we look at LoRa and some of these other projects that are maybe smaller infrastructure, lower capital versus like a cellular build out. We look at those as just a basket of items that can go on a site to kind of bolster the value. So you're seeing like LoRa would be a good example. That's an easy, antenna to just throw up with the other stuff. You're seeing things like, it could be air quality monitors, weather monitors, there's satellite positioning devices out there that are kind of leveraging this Web3 model. And so I look at those as all complementary to, once you have kind of the leading technology offering, which would be cellular, just because the market's so big, it allows you to maybe subsidize some of those other ones where they're still working on the flywheel for the demand side. But we definitely view those as super valuable, kind of as a basket of add-ons as well.
That's great.
And I think it's important to note as well that Helium CBRS gateways are leveraging that IoT network as well. I think a lot of people that are deploying on the ground don't necessarily know that. But
oh yeah,
every one of them is my gateway. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to add one other thing to what Andrew said, but more on the mobile side. I think there could be some interesting opportunities maybe in licensed spectrum. So that's one of the sort of unique features of World Mobile, is they've gone out and purchased licensed spectrum in, I think, parts of Utah, Nevada, California, and New Mexico. And, allowing kind of getting licensed spectrum, or maybe you can kind of create a larger blanket coverage and then come in with Wi-Fi, CBRS, and do micro coverage. And I feel like what would be kind of the ultimate is if there is underutilized spectrum in certain areas, maybe with carriers or other groups that kind of realize the value of what DY or DY builders can provide. And I think there's probably a way to sort of like tokenize or revenue share that unused spectrum. So I think, from the spectrum perspective, it would be really interesting to kind of bring that kind of like a tokenization to spectrum.
Yeah. It does seem like a missing component. You've seen tokenizations of other different types of marketplaces, but for at least in my understanding, that doesn't seem to have really taken full effect with spectrum, from probably a variety of reasons. But I think that would be a really compelling opportunity and use case for sure.
Yeah, we see that as a huge, that would be a huge step forward and a huge value add, especially if the projects are willing to subsidize it to some degree. In terms of like giving the deployers access to spectrum without having them pay, exorbitant rates for that. So that's a huge bonus. And oh, Nick, yeah. I don't know if I feel like we cut you off there on the LoRa side of things. Were you going to add anything in terms of like the gateways, including LoRa?
No, I didn't have anything to add there. Just if you are operating a FreedomFi gateway, upgrade that antenna and provide usable LoRa coverage. I think that's super low hanging fruit for deployment. Yeah. I know you guys are big proponents of that as well. So glad to hear that there's some emphasis on that.
Yeah, and there's still a team within Nova that is really working hard on kind of these overarching commercial agreements on the LoRa side. And so I think it may be part of the story in terms of the arc of Helium is that there was this huge boom of adoption and excitement, and the demand side on the LoRa really didn't materialize quick enough to really kind of meet that excitement. But those things are still getting worked on, and we do think there's a huge, market in the future for that. So we're excited for, announcements on that front as well in 2024, looking forward.
Yeah, when considering that there is such a, such ubiquitous coverage now that they've been able to deploy, you guys have been an important part of that process. There, for people that are building, that they've got these ideas, there are a lot of things that you can start to do because there is so much more coverage on the LoRa side. And so, I even know that I've been tinkering on just a couple of things just personally, because you can see, wow, you can go out and actually build it on top of this, and you don't have to worry about, well, are there going to be gaps? I know that a lot of that has to do with the technology itself, but it's also a big component of it because of the people deploying these things. So it makes it really compelling if you're looking at different opportunities to say, hey, this is a viable option for me to build on top of. And I know that's sort of been the entire plan from the get-go, but it's great to see that sort of materialize on the network side that you can use as a builder or developer.
Yeah, it's really fun. Like you said, when you buy an off-the-shelf LoRa device and you connect it to the Helium network and it just works,
Right.
So I think for the DIYers, that's great. And for the folks that want just a simpler kind of UX that they can just boot up right away, those things are coming. So to your point, Tyler, that it is exciting times.
Yeah. No, it's exciting times indeed. And it's been a crazy 2023. Obviously, the token price going up has been sort of fun for those of us who have been here, especially you guys building in the bear from the very, very beginning. So I just wanted to say thank you guys for coming on, taking the time to give us sort of the state of deployments in 23, giving us your perspective on what's going to happen in 24. It's going to be a really great time for all of us that are either outside looking in or sort of involved in the day to day. It's just going to be a good time for everything. I'm super excited.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Tyler. Really appreciate giving us the opportunity, especially kind of us deployers. I'm hoping things keep going well in 2024. Maybe we'll have like a deployers roundtable at some point. And there's really a lot of great operators in the space. And I don't know that we'd be here, honestly, or would have survived the bear market without a lot of help from other deployers. And so it's kind of you often get asked, like, who's your competition? And it's like, well, and honestly, the space is more cooperative than it is competitive. And so, yeah, I really appreciate you guys shining a light on the deployers. And so shout out to all the other folks. There's a lot of really good teams across the country and the world that are building just like we are.
Yeah. Well, we got a chance to kind of talk a few months ago at the EV3 summit about doing a roundtable of sorts. So it's still definitely on the agenda. We're going to make it happen. Maybe 2024 will be the year we get to do that.
All right. Looking forward to it. Yeah, no, like Josh said, thanks so much for having us. It's great to have these conversations. I think there's a lot of power in having conversations. So in that front, like if you want to reach out to Josh or I, happy to talk with anyone about this stuff. This is our day to day. We live it, breathe it. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Perfect. And I'll be sure to link all their contact information below, how you can get in touch with LongFi directly or Josh and Andrew. But yeah, I wanted to say thank you, Nick. Thanks for joining the conversation. Thanks for pushing us along, getting us into the weeds a little bit. We'll wrap it up there, everybody, and we'll see y'all in the next one. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler.
All righty. Bye-bye.